Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it's our PGA Championship recap, including frustrated golfers, headshots, and a two-time PGA winner, plus an update on the Phil drama and a brand new release, which is sure to shock. We're tuned into some foul balls and Spider-Man, and this week's guests are the creators of the newest marketplace for golf merch. We get into all things Mully Golf, plus the Celtics championship run continues, and it's a pizza debate and an on-the-job update as well, when we always end with food, all of it brought to you by our good, good friends at Desert Fox Golf. Mike, they're out there in Arizona giving golfers exactly what they need, a nice, stable place to put your phone on the golf cart. It is something that's needed by everyone, because we all have phones and we're all golfing since we're all listening to this. So when you're out there, you want the Desert Fox phone caddy by your side. Check out desertfoxgolf.com and see their array of colors, lines, designs to create your own phone caddy. Use our promo code Course of Life. Again, promo code Course of Life to save 10% off at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Snacks, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a whipping, howling, windy week in Tulsa, Oklahoma, yes, for the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. A lot of different storylines going on throughout the week, but at the end, we got three extra holes of golf, and Justin Thomas takes the Wanamaker Trophy for the second time, defeating Will Zalatoris in that three-hole playoff. And is the bigger storyline here that Justin Thomas won and is now a two-time major champion, or is that Mito Pereira fumbled on the last hole of the tournament and couldn't get it done?
Yeah,
there was what's the story here?
Admittedly, a lot going on. I was saying on Twitter all week, I wasn't like super enamored with the way the tournament was playing out in terms of just a drama and intrigue level. Sunday morning, I wasn't like super thrilled looking at the leaderboard of what was to come. But in classic golf major championship fashion, the drama delivered on Sunday. We had JT coming from seven back, like you mentioned, like just a complete a borderline afterthought. And then we have the double bogey at the last from Mito Pereira. The choke job, the come from behind, the sudden death playoff. This really did deliver in every aspect of the things we love about tournament golf on Sunday.
Yeah, and JT was someone that maybe you thought had an outside chance coming into the day on Sunday to put himself in position and win this. But really, we were looking more at like, you know, would Zalatoris be able to rise to the occasion? Would Stuart Sink be able to put together a good round? Would Bubba be able to follow up his good round? And Bubba and Sink just kind of fell apart on Sunday, which was really surprising. And JT put in that great round, and Zalatoris just kind of hung around because Mito kept giving everybody opportunities to overtake him, and no one seemed to be able to do it. And it almost seemed like Mito didn't want to win it.
Yeah, it was like, you know,
and then he got to 18 and he went, okay, fine. No one else wants to take it from me. I'll just give it
everyone
to you.
Everyone else is like, which here, is Mito, unfortunate. Here, have a 2-3 shot lead. And then a hole later, he's like, oh, no, I'll give you one back. It's just one. Yeah. No, I insist. Take the two. No, just one. So he never really could separate. And that moment presented himself when he just straight up needed par to win. And he made the worst swing of the week at the worst time, like it the typical nervous swing that you and I would make when we're heading to the 18th hole and we're trying to break a milestone score. Like that's the kind of swing you and I would make under the gun is exactly what he did. So the choke job happened from there with the double. But yeah, Zalatoris landed in the playoffs with JT, who was just lingering around, hanging around all day, just persistently making pars when he needed to. He gets it in at 5-under and super impressive in the playoff to birdie two of the three holes. Very impressive stuff to go 2-under through three holes in a tournament where he went 5-under throughout the course of 72. So gutsy stuff from Thomas to get his second PGA win.
Yeah, and Zalatoris really did. I mean, going birdie par, he didn't do the right thing maybe on 18 or give himself a chance at a birdie. But his, you know, Zalatoris is going to be back in this situation again with a chance to win. Justin Thomas, I feel like maybe was that he was the grizzled veteran in this place. He's been in major championships. Yep. He's won one before. He's won a Players. He knows the pressure and what to do here. So I think that's what really gave him the edge when push comes to shove to win this tournament.
Definitely. Yeah. Good drama with the golf all around. We love the sudden death finish. And you and I commented on it. The 3-hole playoff, big fan. I think that's like just enough golf to keep the drama level high. And it's not too short for it to be a sudden death. So I really love the way the 3-hole format played out as well.
And there's nothing worse to me than a full 18-hole playoff. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of like cute and neat back in the day for us U.S. Open fans on the Monday playoff. But not missing that at all. So that was the golf. But I want to get to all the kind of random tidbits and the drama that unfolded, because the news of the week was not stopping, despite where the golf was the first few days. Several different headlines. The first one I want to get to is kind of more course specific. The wind absolutely howling, like you said, and the part of the course that just frustrated these golfers to no end, Mike. I don't know how much complaining you saw about this. Everyone hates the sand at Southern Hills because, what would you believe this, Mike? A bunker and a hazard was difficult. Unbelievable, right?
You know, I feel like over the last year, we've heard a lot more players complaining about how bad it is when they don't hit the ball where they're supposed to hit it.
Yes. The sand should be perfectly manicured. What's going on? I'll tell you what's going on. It's actually a hazard. You're not supposed to hit it in there, so you should be penalized accordingly. So you can't be complaining about the sand when you're playing for millions of dollars. That's my stance on that.
It's you're the best players in the world. Your game out of the bunker and the rough is what makes us all go, wow, these guys are good. Because, you know, everybody thinks that they can hit it 300 yards off the tee. It's that we can't hit it out of the rough and put it on the green from 200 yards out with, you know, a 7-iron. And it's that we can't be in a bunker next to the green and hit it within 6 inches and then make our tap in for par. That's what makes you the best players in the world. So quit your bitching.
Yeah, but they can't spin their 20-yard bunker shot and stop it on a dime after flying it in the air, Mike. Don't you feel horrible for them?
I just want to be able to spin the ball at will.
Ever, in any scenario.
Yeah. So, you know, just shut up and deal with it. But we did have a rather normal man moment when Aaron Wise got hit in the head.
Yes. Yeah. I said head shots in the intro. There was a couple. This was the player one that happened mid-tournament. Cam Smith, a.k.a. the Mullet, hit a drive wide right on a hole. And Southern Hills, pretty tight track, in case you couldn't gather it from watching. A lot of the holes and fairways ran right next to each other. So a wide right drive will, you guess it, hit the right side of the fairway on another hole. And Aaron Wise was just minding his own business when he was struck squarely in the head by Cam Smith's drive. Mike, have you ever been hit by a golf ball before?
I have not been hit by a golf ball. The wife has been hit in the face and has the stitches to prove it on her chin.
Wow. From being hit as a kid. Shot.
So we honestly don't make a ton of jokes about being hit by a golf ball because of that. Because it is not, having lived with someone who's been through that kind of experience, it is very traumatic.
That was my near-death experience. I'm about to tell you right now. Nabnassik Country Club, Westford, Massachusetts, 2004 summer. Remember it like it was yesterday. Second shot of a par five. I walked about 100 yards ahead of my playing partner who was laying up. He skulls his 5-iron and it's coming right at my head. My life flashes before my eyes and I duck to my right, if you can picture this, and the ball hits my left shoulder. So no telling what would have happened if I didn't turn that day and moment. But that is definitely the scariest, most random thing that can happen on a course. And it happened to a world-class player this past weekend at Sunday. And then it happened to ESPN Sage Steele as well. Yeah. Who got hit with a random John Rahm shot. She had to go to the hospital. So watch out for flying golf balls. No joke when someone yells 4 on the golf course.
It's really not. I think this is interesting, too, that if you remember 5 years ago in 2017, when JT won his PGA, this was on Fox, a short-lived stint where Fox did golf and Joe Buck did golf.
He's back now.
Joe Buck was back doing golf. He jumped ship. He's on ESPN, and so he did a mega cast. And, I mean, I don't get ESPN, so I don't know anything about it, but I have no interest whatsoever. And I just hate the idea of it And it sounds like Joe Buck hated it too.
Yeah, he did. And nothing against his partner, Michael Collins, who we love, the ESPN caddy, who does a great job. They were funny together, but you could tell that Joe Buck was just absolutely miserable not being on the actual call. Like he wants that Scott Van Pelt, Jim Nantz spot when in terms of being the number one guy calling an event, and he has not been given it yet. He was not taking this thing seriously. Horrible with transitions, just very loosey-goosey operation from Joe Buck. You could see the disdain on his face and in his eyes for what he was having to do all week on this megacast. There were some cool guests on there. Funny enough, Mike, former Course of Life podcast guest Kelly James was actually a guest on the megacast. So that was cool to see. But definitely Joe Buck is ruining the day with this shift to ESPN. I know he's dying to get back in the booth because you could tell he was just a little triggered all week on the megacast.
Let's talk Tiger Woods, shall we?
Yes.
Let's talk about the big cat in the room. He made the cut. He made the cut. Another notch in his belt, another thing that he accomplished after almost having his leg cut off. However, he had a really, really horrific Saturday and decided to withdraw and not play on Sunday. I think we can all agree this is not because he was maybe one or two strokes away from being the worst guy on the course, but was because of how cold it was, the wind whipping, and how, you know, that his body just couldn't take it anymore.
It just sucks to see, Mike, you know, because it's like, it's no matter where you stand in terms of being a Tiger Woods fan, just take him aside and just the idea of him coming back and making this return. Always tough to see someone that, you know, really, really, really wants to be back out there and playing at full strength, and they just can't do it. His body just physically will not come together for him day by day to play 72 holes at the level he wants to. It can be the level where he just sneaks by and makes cuts, which is nice, you know, for the ceremonial fanfare aspect of seeing Tiger play again. That's great, but definitely a very sombering Saturday 79, followed by the withdrawal, and you don't even get to see the Sunday red and him play out the string at Southern Hills. Definitely maybe a step back, I would say, compared to the Masters. Just kind of maybe... obviously, it's great to just see him back. We've already established that. But just talking in terms of seeing him play again, when do you think we might see Tiger Woods after this injury-riddled week?
I mean, I think the smartest thing for him to do is to just shut it down and come back. If he's going to come back this year, to come back at St. Andrews. Feels like the most sense instead of coming back in Boston for the U.S. Open. Give himself the full 2 months and come back at St. Andrews for the Open Championship. And
man, Mike, these flights are so expensive these days. I was looking to go back for the practice rounds at Brookline Country Club. Not happening, man. It's just too expensive to travel right now. But regardless, yeah, I don't think we're going to see him there. I don't know if we're going to get Tiger at Brookline. I know he'd love to be part of that week. All the history surrounding the 99 Ryder Cup and the return to that venue and a great sports city, but just not sure he's going to be ready for that. So it does seem like maybe it's just St. Andrews. We discuss it's just big tournaments only these days for Tiger. So it could be see you in July for the 150th playing of the Open at the home course there. So definitely a sombering week, like I mentioned. Great to see him back out there, but not the way any of us wanted him to end the week.
Yep. I want to talk about one more thing before we talk about the defending champion being absent and that is Scottie Scheffler missing the cut. How much should we read into this right now? Do you think at all, or should we just say he just had an off week and maybe that's okay? Because there were a lot of guys who had off weeks leading into this. So
I don't know.
What are we saying here? Do we still put him high on the board for the U.S. Open at Brookline, or do we kind of knock him down now and say let his hot streak's over?
I think maybe hot streak isn't over, but it this may be the week he needed to just kind of a reset and realize that like you can set the world on fire, but you can't do it forever. So maybe he needed that mentally. That was a surprise miscut though. He'd gone on and on about how this is one of his favorite venues to play. He'd said that before. So it was a surprise to see him not make the weekend. I wouldn't read too much into it personally. Just an off week and an off couple rounds for Scheffler. And we'll see him back this week at Colonial as well.
So let's talk about Phil Mickelson. He was absent noticeably, maybe to the players. We didn't really hear a lot about it on the broadcast. So no defending champion at Southern Hills. It was a little odd, maybe, that we didn't have that going on, but there's a lot that's been happening in Phil's life. And of course, on Tuesday as well, came out the great next saga in Phil's life, and that is the book by Alan Shipnuck that we're all going to read right here on the podcast. You got your copy. Mine's coming in the mail tomorrow.
I'm holding it with my own hands right now. And it's nice. Yep. We don't do this very often, but we're bringing back the book club in honor of this release. Good to just hold a hard copy, hard cover in your hands. You know, it just brings you back to a simpler time. It's Phil, the rip roaring parentheses and unauthorized parentheses biography of golf's most colorful superstar by Alan Shipnuck. This is going to be a fascinating read. We've been talking about this release for a few months now. If you do want to join in on the book club, we are going to start this week with the first few chapters. We're thinking we're going to go about 3 chapters a week on this one. So it should be fun. I encourage everyone to purchase the book and read along with us. But Mike, just to tease you right now, before you get it at your doorstep, chapter 1 is pretty simple. It's just Alan asking around former athletes, broadcasters, professionals in the golf space, give me your favorite Phil Mickelson story. So chapter 1 could certainly go in any direction to start things off.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting this book in my hands and for us to start reading this one. So we'll have our first installment of the book club coming back next week. It's been a while. It's been, we started this up during COVID, and it's time to bring it back.
No, it's good. So I'm excited for this one. This is not a crazy read, by the way. Everyone's like, oh my God, book. No, scared of books. Me no likey book. No, this isn't bad. We're looking at 200-something pages, 19 chapters, like 10 pages a chapter. And, you know, very doable read for everyone out there.
Reading is good for you. There are studies that show that if you read and you challenge your mind in different ways, you will help make sure that you don't lose your mind later in age. So, you know, this is an important thing.
And preventing insanity as well, too. Here.
To not turn into Phil Mickelson and do dumb stuff, you should read this book about Phil Mickelson. Can we also touch on real quick, by the way, since we're talking about Phil, we talked last week about Jack and about how it came out that he was approached by the LIV League and offered over $100 million to kind of do what Greg Norman is doing. Yeah. And now the Nicklaus companies are suing Jack.
It's like fighting within the family. How about that? Jack Nicklaus being sued by Nicklaus companies. What a headline.
Because he's doing all this other, he's supposed to like be exclusive to the Nicklaus companies, but he's doing all this other stuff. And they had to talk him out of taking the money and going to the LIV tour and doing stuff with them. And it's like, man, what is happening?
Don't worry, Mike. What Jack Nicklaus has the antibodies. He's immune. Don't worry about it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I completely forgot about that, actually. let's talk about this coming weekend, because the PGA is now in a rearview mirror. It's time to talk about the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial.
Yes, just did my write-up for runyourpool.com. You can check out the full read and an assortment of my picks and thoughts there. But Colonial, Mike, classic track, 7,200 yards, shorter venue. Got to work it around the trees. This is not a bombit course. You got to be crafty here. So this is a shot maker's ball striker type of venue, a very familiar spot. It's been on the calendar forever, so always a nice return, especially after the week after a major.
Yeah, do you think Justin Thomas is going to be in the field? But do we think he's actually? I don't think he's.
We're just going to go ahead. I'm just going to lay a bet. No, if he's there, I'm pleasantly surprised that he has dropped the partying and gotten right back to business.
Will Scotty Scheffler be there? Do you think Scotty is like, I got to get right back out there in a short week?
I'm counting on the Dallas guys to show up. I'm talking about Spieth and Scheffler. Morikawa in the field as we're recording as well, along with a slew of others. Just a nice come down. You know, Southern Hills was pretty grueling. I'm not saying it's a birdie fest at Colonial, but a much easier, shorter track. A lot more irons and three woods. A lot more shot shaping going on. So it should be an interesting week. I enjoy the track. It's fun watching the Fort Worth area on CBS as well, too. Our Twitter picks will be coming Wednesday evening for who we like. You're at MWRINC, and I'm at Course of Life 1. we've been sniffing the door on these winners recently, and we both had a winner of our own last month, so we'll see if we can pick it up again.
All right, let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I'm like 6 months late here, but I finally watched Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh, nice. All right, what's the review?
There's lots of Spider-Men, and I have to say that I really, really wish that we got more of, wow, I'm completely blanking on his name, which is really unfortunate for me.
That means that he wasn't very notable then, I guess.
No, he was noticeable. I'm trying to look it up because, you know, I'm a horrible person.
So
like that.
Tom Holland crushed his role, though? How'd he do?
Tom Holland was great. Tobey Maguire was in it. Andrew Garfield. You know, it was like the OGs all came back together. Willem Dafoe. There we go.
Oh, yeah.
Was hands down, he was the best. When you see him again on screen playing Norman Osborn and Green Goblin, it's like, man, he was the best superhero villain. He really was. It's just like, it's great.
Okay. Spider-Man No Way Home. Probably a go see. Yep. Like it. Awesome.
I would say, yeah, go see it. What about you? What were you tuning into?
YouTube wormhole again. And Mike, have you ever heard of the foul ball guy, Zach Hample?
I don't think I have.
So he's this YouTuber who's just a massive baseball fan, and he's made his rise to fame by literally just catching foul balls everywhere at Major League Baseball parks. He goes to baseball games anywhere he possibly can around the country and the world, catching foul balls, getting balls everywhere. He's a collector of all sorts and a YouTuber. It's just a really neat casual watch because he just goes to all these wonderful parks. You know, I'm a stadium nerd. You love a good stadium as well, too. I'm curious, do you have any memories of catching or getting a foul ball or at a baseball game in your life?
I've never gotten a foul ball at a baseball game.
I don't think I have either.
There was a day when we were at a bunch of friends were at Fenway and they were just doing batting practice because we got there early and we were out in the center field grandstands. And a friend did get a ball from I think it was Big Poppy. At least that's the story we're going with. I think the story we came up with is Big Poppy hit a game winning home run to win the game, and we got that ball.
Yeah, no, I mean, he gets them in batting practice. He gets them on the third and first baseline for warmups. He gets the third out ball as they're running back into the dugout. He'll chase balls into pools in the stadium in Florida or Arizona. He knows no limits. It's definitely a fun watch. It's inspired me. I'm thinking I might have just a foul ball guy day myself. I got a AAA ballpark about 15 minutes away from my front door. I may just have to go do it and just get there early and just catch bombs out in left field for the Round Rock Express. So maybe some future content coming from my next baseball trip here after watching these videos.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I am. But for now, let's get into this week's guest, Alex.
Yeah, got some entrepreneurs.
Talk to the guys from Mully Golf. Yeah,
Mully Golf is a really cool company that I'd seen and been on my radar for a bit, and I'm glad we got connected to Michael and Steve, a couple of entrepreneurs that have very interesting backgrounds in how they connected and what they created, something very unique. For those out there who are always buying, selling, trading, always looking for that newest golf merch to accompany them on the course, this is the conversation for you.
We'll get into that in just a second. But first, let's talk about our favorite golf balls out there on the course. Those are the Volvic XT Soft and Volvic Vivids. These are those bright yellow or red or orange golf balls that you see out there. These are the good ones.
Yeah, and they're not jokes anymore. You know, we used to always make the joke when we were younger that you'd want to find like white golf balls, but if you found a yellow or an orange one, you should just kind of laugh at it or like save it for a mini golf course. But Volvic's changed the game on color golf balls.
Yeah, they've got great performance. That XT Soft is a three-piece ball, and it gives you great explosive distance and accuracy greenside, so it'll stick out both with its yellow color and it'll stick to the green for you. And they sent us a bunch of these back when we started talking about them, and I really love playing with them. And I feel like my game has gotten better when I'm actually playing more. If I play every 6 months, not so much. But when I'm playing once a month now, I feel like the game is coming together and I'm learning how to use this ball really well. So Volvic doesn't spend their money on tour players and marketing to all them. They give us a couple pennies every day and instead put all their money into making the best high-performance balls out there on the market. So head on over to Volvic.com, check out all their different golf balls, all their different colors. Plus they got merch, towels, accessories, and some really cool collectibles for all the great golfers and collectible fans in your life. Volvic.com, performance and color. Volvic has a ball for every swing.
Next up on the tee, we have a couple of entrepreneurs that have created an app for everyone out there golfing who maybe buys or sells golf apparel here and there. I want to hear how this could make my life easier too. I got to test it out for myself, but the creators of Mully Golf are here. It's Mike and Steve joining us on the Course of Life. How's it going this evening, guys?
Hey, what's going on? It's going great. This is Mike.
Hey, what's up? This is Steve. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. It's great to have you guys again. It's Mully Golf for people who are on their phones scrolling and want to check out the app right now. First ever kind of golf community marketplace. And I like the way that's phrased. My purchasing history and buying golf gear in general is messy. It's scattered. I don't know where I'm getting things very often. And I could definitely use something like this in my life. Michael, I'll start with you. Playing maybe with your father at a young age, something you and I have in common. Going back to the original memories you have of golf apparel, what are your some fun early memories of just golf apparel and merchandise as it stands?
Alex, so first I'll echo Steve, man. Thank you for having us on. I can tell you've done some homework, so I'm going to try not to cry on this podcast. That'll be a first.
All good.
But man, you're going back on memories, you know, I'll just share like my parents, I mean, and Steve has a great story too, about how we found the game and what Mully means to us. It means a lot to be here to share that. I think first and foremost, you know, my parents got divorced like many parents do. I spent time with my dad through golf. So that's really, really the reason I took it up, you know, just to spend more time with him. But man, I'd be lying to say if I didn't rock the red polo with black, you know, trousers, like trying to be like the El Tigre, because he was one of the big reasons I did want to keep with the game and in play. So I definitely rock, like, I remember that like vintage, it's the vintage, like the Hyundai lookalike Nike Tiger logo. You remember that one?
I do. Yes. Very yeah, well.
I had the red polo. I had the white original Air, I think they were called Air Zooms. And then, I would definitely inherit some of my dad's hand-me-downs because I didn't want to wear like khakis and stuff in my spare time. So I had some of the pleated khakis, you know, they're now somehow making a comeback. Memories of those early golf days. I'll tell you that my wardrobe was nothing shy of terrible. So
definitely. I was 9 or 10 years old when Tiger won that Masters in 97. So all of my golf wear was influenced by him as well too. So I feel you on that. And my dad handed me down those wonderful, like, old school TaylorMade and Titleist logo hats from like the late 80s and 90s, which are now friggin' awesome because vintage is everything these days.
Collectors. So. I mean, you'd be surprised how many slight plug, early plug on Mully, how many of those like vintage caps are making a comeback, popping up. I mean, they're going. I mean, shout out to, I think Reddy Golf was one of our early guys. Metalwood sold a bunch of great stuff on there with like those vintage looks. Oh, hell yeah.
Let's see if you have me beat or not. What age did you first beat your dad? How old were you?
Oh man, I got to go way back in the archives here. I was probably, I want to say, this is realistically probably like 15.
Yeah. Okay. I think I was about 14 or 15 as well too. So we're about the same spot there, right? When I turned the corner into high school was when I got real good.
Yeah, the second I learned a little bit about speed and then I could hit the ball a little bit further. I mean, my short game, if you played at a young age, you had to get a good short game, had to practice short game because you're getting every par 4 and 3 anyway. So if you had any chance of making par, you had to get up and down. So the second I got the distance, my dad was toast.
I love that. Very cool. Hey, and Steve, thanks for hopping on with us as well, too. And you have a very cool background in golf, like Mike hinted at. But I got to ask about your first job, cutting grass at a golf course, because I played golf my whole life, but I can never really say that I've actually worked for money on a golf course specifically. Growing up, what was a day in the life like working on the course?
Brutal. I mean, I think I was probably 16 or 17, maybe. It was my first like real job, like real summer job. And I was cutting greens and doing landscaping at a local country club. And man, I remember nothing like being a 16 or 17 year old. You're out with your friends the night before, having a good time, doing God knows what. And you have to set your alarm clock back when that was a thing for, 4:30 in the morning.
Oh man.
Because you are on the golf course, you know, mower revved up, oiled up, ready to go by 5:15, because you know that first summer tee time is like 7 a.m. You got to have all 18 greens cut by 7 a.m., man. You and three other guys are hustling around cutting six greens at a time. And then after that, it just got brutal. That was the best part of my day. I had my Walkman, or maybe it was a Discman back then. Might have been tapes, might have been CDs. I don't remember. and you know, right after that, it's like, all right, hey, we got to go dig out this new bunker, or fix this part of the irrigation system, or lay new sod on these, you know, 2,000 square feet of whatever. By the way, it's you and this other guy. Grab a cart and go. It was brutal, equally rewarding, I would say. Certainly as a golfer, I picked up golf at 16 and went to work pretty much right away at a golf course. Really gives me an appreciation for a course and the maintenance that goes into that, and the men and women who literally, you know, work their fingers to the bone in some cases to keep up courses for us so we can go out and have a good time. So
yeah, brutal. I was curious what the alarm clock was, and it was as early as I anticipated.
4:30. Man, it was 2 hours before the sun came up.
But wait, can I ask a question? Can I interview for a sec? Like, I want to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
What, 16 years old? I mean, Steve and I are business partners, best friends, and cousins. We're family and that. So I don't even know what you're doing at 16 years old. I mean, I guess I'm a few years younger than you, but now I want to know.
Cutting greens, man. You show
no,
up.
No, and... no. Saturday night. Oh, like the night
Saturday
before.
Night? Yeah. Oh, man. Come on, bro. If you didn't GoldenEye, you weren't living.
Oh, yes. Oh. My favorite level was the library, Steve. I'm a big library guy. So.
I feel you. If you weren't doing GoldenEye, you weren't alive at that time.
You know what I did, by the way, the other day? I did, you guys ever been to like those breakout rooms? Those like, you know, you got to go and there's like riddles everywhere and you got to get out of the room. You've done those?
Yeah, the escape rooms, yes.
Yeah. So I did one literally last night, and I'm not kidding. They had the GoldenEye, like it was the, remember the pause music? Dun, 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 and then it got late. It was a funky beat. That was awesome. They played that old music in the escape room. I was like, damn, I felt like 007.
Yeah, very appropriate soundtrack. I love that too.
Yeah.
Good. I'm curious. You and I, Steve and Mikey, we're all kind of cut from the same cloth, very generationally wise. When you kind of first came on to the Mully team and the idea came about to actually create this app, you kind of knowing your experience in the game and seeing it from a working at a golf course perspective, what was one thing that you wanted to make sure was a part of Mully, just in general as a company?
Wow. Great question. Stemming from working at a golf course, I guess I always felt like the younger generation was always underserved. You know, Mike was talking about Tiger Woods, and Mike's a few years younger than I am. You know, I was more of like the Davis Love III, you know, transitioned into David Duval. And I had to really look for like a look on the golf course. Otherwise I was going to inherit, you know, the pleated khakis and the oversized, you know, crazy print shirt. That's all the rage nowadays that, of course, my closet is full of. But back when you're 16 and you're trying to impress women as a golfer, which I definitely yes. don't recommend if you're 16, maybe nowadays, that wasn't the look you wanted for. So I think Mully, to me, for the more youthful community, being a place or a space where you could come and connect with other golfers was really important to me. That's not something I was able to do very well. Not a lot of my friends play golf. I had to play a lot of golf with perfect strangers, which is always weird as a teenager to have a conversation with a fully formed adult. It being a place where you can come, you know, meet new brands, get cool stuff, and here coming soon shortly, connect with the community for the community commerce aspect of things was something that had to carry through.
I love that. Very well said. So I logged on and played around with the app. It's got really nice ease of use regarding kind of creating a feed for yourself so you can see what you want and selling and whatnot. Seems very easy to me as a user checking out Mully Golf. I'm curious though, the grind behind it. Tell me about how many, maybe what, tens or dozens or hundreds of iterations it took to get the app to where we see it today and what went into it all.
Yeah, I guess I'm the tech guy in this venture, so I'll tackle that one. There was an iteration like just pre-COVID that really I'd say focused on more the e-commerce side of things. Mm-hmm. When Mike and I had, you know, COVID hit, our developers got sick because they were, you know, all overseas or whatever, and it actually turned out, besides being, you know, golf's largest growth period since Tiger.
Right.
turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because it gave us a beat to take a minute, take stock of the market, take a look around, and look at the trends of what was happening in retail, period. Forget the, you know, oh, I went from, you know, brick and mortar to online. It's people just shop and browse in an entirely different way now. The whole social commerce thing, you know, with the Poshmarks of the world, the Depops, the Grailed, where they're taking these like hyper passionate communities about something and bringing them together in a space online to buy, sell, trade, interact, is the model that we're replicating for golf. I mean, I don't think we're shy about saying that anywhere. And when you take a look at some of those communities, like, you know, Sneakerheads is just an example. You know, those guys were, they had their online forums and they brought it to, you know, the Grailed of the world, or, you know, the Goats of the world, or the StockX's of the world. They bring all of that passion and experience to that. Well, there is no more community-based sport, no more, you know, social sport than golf.
Oh, yeah.
And golf's always been pretty traditionally slow to adopt just about anything modern. So this is kind of our way of pushing golf into what I would say the early 2010s are, you know, fast forwarding them a good 10 or 15 years by engaging the younger generation.
Yeah.
This really is just our second iteration of the platform.
Yeah. Okay. Sick. Amazing. Really. Well done with what you've done with those iterations and the community really shining through there, and the community marketplace that's being created with Molly. This is neat. So I guess from my perspective, when I'm looking on and I say, you know, if there's something I want to see more of on Molly as an app, and I'm not finding exactly what I want. I want more novelty items, or I want more ball markers on the site. How do you guys answer, and how does that process work for you as a company, kind of finding all the product that the audience wants to be featured?
Mikey, you're up.
I'll jump in for a second. And I think Steve did a great job answering that last question of the iterations, because I probably would have butchered that with my patience level. because technology, starting a business first and foremost, is you have to be patient. You have to be hungry. You have to be excited. You have to be motivated and passionate. But if you don't have patience, it's all going to fall over. And I think I got to give credit to my business partner, Steve. He is the patient one. He's taught me a lot. I mean, this is my third or fourth startup. And I've had some success, and I've had probably a little bit more failure, just because of my patience. And I think, you know, if anyone out there listening who's starting a company, who has a company, who can attest to that, or maybe has failed and learned the shit, I need more patience. The iterations and the building this thing has been nothing short of extraordinary on every level. From the idea of how it was created, just that pure necessity of partly in my life, enrolling Steve, knowing he has amazing tech background, and our partnership is quite beautiful, at least in my opinion, because you know, you've got someone out there on the sales and marketing side like me who's chomping at the bit to just get this thing to where it has to go. And Steve's, you know, I want to call it, you know, the, I don't know what the right word is, just massive tech experience, it's just complimentary. So
love that.
When we finally got the market ready version, you know, we were smart enough. We were smart enough to enroll a couple. I want to leave their names out of this, but just a couple of vendors, large sellers on eBay, to kind of help us populate the marketplace from jump. Okay. We've seen a lot of other industries kind of try and do what we're doing, and you know, you go there if you're spending all this time, energy, and money enrolling the community, the users, and there's nothing there. You're quick one and done. You know, your first impression isn't much. So. To first answer your question, it was really getting some key retailers who were tired of even the eBay fees. You know, I'm not sure if they got deals on eBay or not, but you know, a lot of this was stemmed from just that 10%, which is now 12.5%. It was prohibitive. You know, I didn't want to sell on eBay just because it was taking so much money out of my pocket, and that was kind of like at least my kernel for wanting to start Molly, is to give power back to the sellers, give the power back to the community. To Steve's point, you know, let's try and make, if we could take away that fee, we could actually lower the price point, hopefully, in listings that way golf items, clubs, accessories, apparel is more affordable especially in the secondhand market to a younger crowd, which again, all golf is catering to right now. So first it was getting those retailers in, and then you know what, and I'll turn it over to Steve to get his opinion on this, but the community is so powerful, and there's so many cool things out there. The more we don't actually steer the marketplace whatsoever. I think that we obviously have a weekly roundup, and we promote things on our social channels, and we highlight cool items. But for the most part, these are all coming organically from the community, and the community is loyal. They're excited about what we're building. And I think they're excited to share what they have. And like furthermore, furthermore, and Steve highlighted this because he's seeing a lot of the information every day, is we're seeing so many, because golf is, we make this analogy, it's skateboarding in the 90s is golf today. You know, what was once really like weird and no one liked it is now it's a cool, it's a part of pop culture. And because of that, you're getting a lot of niche brands, like these little startup, you know, garage mom and pop type, you know, little guys starting a brand, like a, whether it's, I just bought something from, you know, like those brush tools you clean your clubs with. I just purchased one myself from a startup guy, you know, the small company that's starting his brand on Molly. And then another one, you know, a clothing apparel line starting his brand on Molly, because we are creating a focused audience of eyeballs in the golf community that people are wanting to, you know, they know we're going to bring the exposure with our marketing size and our marketing push. So they're just kind of creating these little brands in the golf space. And it's amazing. It's amazing what we see every day. So we don't like to, I guess to answer your question directly, we're not actually trying to do anything other than just create a marketplace that's easy to, for a brand to use, easy for a seller to use, easy for a buyer to check out. So
that's good. And it feels like we're not being oversold a certain set of products or brands as well too on the marketplace itself. So I appreciate that fact as I'm browsing and I'm a golfer. I'll let you guys definitely answer about this because we were kind of hinting at this right now. The thing that I love about this kind of niche marketplace itself and in golf nerds who are really tapping into the culture of cool merch and things like that. Talk to me about the idea behind kind of like the daily, the drop, the tune in factor to a new product that hits the marketplace on Molly. You know, I equate it to the way Jordan shoes come out and the sneakerhead population goes nuts and there's lines, you know, out the door of stores that are holding pairs of them. What's that look like and what kind of traffic do you guys see from certain products? You know, what items are like the Jordans of golf right now? What's super hot in the golf apparel game?
About Jordans for golf.
Yeah.
Love it.
So go ahead, you know, Mike.
I'm on this side a lot because I think a lot of our friends, and I'm saying friends, like our brand alliances that we've created just in, we started this, you know, Steve quickly built the technology. My job was to go out and just build the name, right? This was what, Steve, 2018, 19, when we really kind of committed to doing this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, knowing it was going to take over a year to get it going, you know, my job was, you know, to lean into the community. And so the first thing we did was build an Instagram. And just make cool content. Next thing you know, we're forming partnerships or kind of alliances with Jones Golf. You know, Matt Lemon over there is just an amazing man, and what he's done with Jones. And then, you know, a good friend of mine, Cole Young, you know, Metalwood. And this is 3 years ago. You know, this isn't today when everyone's like, oh yeah, it's so sick, Cole. So, you know, when we launched, we did some drops with them, and surprisingly, you know, I guess not surprisingly, they just sold out quickly. Because they're great golf brands. I think people, especially in the day and age of shopping now, it's all about authenticity. I think authenticity is what really is selling in today's market. So we are very excited. The technology side of it, I'll let Steve talk to you. We have such a beautiful roadmap in what we want to offer the golf community, but a lot of that is around drops, you know, giving brands a place to alert their own followers in Molly and alert their community of drops they're going to have. You know, apart from us, but we are also doing collaborations with other brands. I'll let the secret remain. So it is a surprise, but we have a lot of drops coming up this summer with some amazing companies. Okay. That we, you know, we'll do some co-branded stuff with the Molly Bulldog and their logos. So we're going to do a combination of both, having some co-branded merch drops coming out soon, which I think is really fun for everybody. And then also updating our technology shortly so that the social side, the connectivity side, and then just the drop alerts and how that goes, it's also going to be updated.
Very cool. Love that Molly Bulldog. Is that one of your dogs or is that just a mascot creation?
I got to give credit to it was my dog. He passed away in a freak accident, and any dog parent, any pet owner out there knows how, you know, what your pets mean to you. And I went through a really rough spell, right as Steve and I were meeting about Molly, and he was like, man, let's, you know, he was such a beautiful dog, and I actually had his face on one of my balls, like on the golf balls. And, Steve looked at one of the balls. He goes, you know, it'd be really cool if we actually made him, his name was Bodie. If we made Bodie, the bulldog, the logo of Molly. And then I got to give credit to Tony Napton. He's over, he founded Radry Golf, and he's over at Random Golf Club. He's their main, I believe he's the main designer, and he just does such a, as a graphic artist, he's just a genius. And he took, I think it was like only two iterations of that. And it was just, it was perfect from jump, and everyone loves the logo. So thank you for that.
So cool. What a great way to honor Bodie too. Love that. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It's Michael and Steve again with Mully Golf. Let's get into some quick shots before we wrap here on the Course of Life. Let's get into some random questions. Favorite random, you know, golf apparel item on Mully that you've seen recently? The marketplace is amazing, and I see kind of all sorts of innovative brands. But what's new, highlighted, and neat that's going on the app right now that people need to check out?
Steve, you're up.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of metalsmithing. I think anybody who can do anything with their hands and fire and metal is pretty cool. There's a golf ball marker guy who just dropped in recently who I liked one of his posts for $20. I'll give him a plug. Pinhigh Golf Co. On Mully will hand stamp a bronze. I think it's a bronze ball marker for you in a bunch of different designs. So you can get a custom metal ball marker with your name on it, with pictures on it, whatever you want for $20. You're not going to find anything cooler than that.
This is the hardest question for me to answer, but I'm going to try. So I'm obsessed with everything, everything vintage, even Nike Golf. I'm looking at this right now. I'm looking at the app right now, guys. There is a brand new, I don't know how these are brand new, but these are from the Tiger era back. This must be 2003 or four. These are some Nike Zoom Advanced golf shoes that are just so sick. Anything vintage. I'm really big in vintage right now. And then also like just the regular golf tees, just t-shirts. I think I picked up like three new Masters tees on the marketplace recently, just to prep for the Masters and the golf season. Massive fan of these half sets, guys. Like right now, I'm such an advocate for the half sets. And oh man, I want to give him a shout out. Tyler, I think it's Tyler Munns is his name. I wish I could remember the handle he's on, Mully, but he has half sets right now. They are like the Nike Pro Combos from back in the day. He's nice. Selling a half set of those. He's got a half set of, I think, like some TaylorMade, that I think the Mura editions that Mura made for TaylorMade. I mean, that's just some of the stuff that we're finding on there. I can't pick. I'm sorry. It's, this answer could be an hour long.
The random social media hot item I saw on there too was the Adidas Waffle House collab. I saw kicks on there with an absurd logo, and they were for sale on the Mully app.
Yeah. Without a doubt, as soon as those went live, I sent the guy a message in Mully and was like, how about a founder's discount? And he writes me back and he's like, I'll give you $25 off.
There it is. That's the marketplace, ladies and gentlemen. I love it. I got to ask, so it's Mully Golf. How many mulligans is it on the course for you? It could be zero, but I'm just curious if there's a number for you.
I have a stern rule about this. So you get a breakfast ball if you did not get time to warm up, or there's no warm up involved. If you hit the first tee and you had a proper warm up sesh, it's you're going. You're good to go. No, zero mulligans.
I'm a purist. I'm zero whether or not you've warmed up.
I'd lean Mike as well too. I'll do the breakfast ball, but you're right. If we're off and we're good to go, then that's it. So I love it. Let's finish with our 19th hole question, brought to you by our friends at Lynx Drinks. What's your go-to? We'll start with Steve first. Your go-to 19th hole meal. You played 18. You get into your favorite clubhouse. What's your favorite meal and drink to order?
Tequila.
Love it. No food to chase at all. It sounds like.
I think he's being serious, actually. Okay,
I'm being totally serious. Yeah, no, definitely more of a cocktail guy post round, not so much a sit for lunch kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the transfusion on the course and off at the 19th hole. I've just been a huge fan of that whole little golf movement behind the transfusion with tequila. I'm a tequila guy as well, and then I'm honestly probably gonna go with. This sounds really weird. It's like a Cobb salad. It sounds really delicious even right now because I'm kind of hungry. And I'll maybe tuna cup. That's my go-to on the golf course.
I like that. I've heard a lot of salads, but I don't think I've ever heard a Cobb salad. So that's a first for that one. Good answer indeed. Steve, Mike, again, with the Mully Golf app. Love what you've done with this community golf marketplace. Look forward to spending more time on there. And best of luck with everything down the road as well.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks, Alex.
And we're back. Great chat there with Michael and Steve. Love this concept and everything they're doing there at Mully Golf. They got an app that you can download onto your phone, the Mully Golf app. That's Mullie.
Yes.
In case you know, It's a little weird word, weird to spell. So there you go. Mully Golf app. Download it and shop for all that cool stuff today. Alex, I got some breaking news.
We do. We got some breaking news here that just we had to stop our lives. Everything came to a standstill because when you get this headline and it comes across the news feed, you have to stop everything you're doing. What's going on at the house there?
There's a snake out on my patio. Oh,
that'll wake people up. If it's early in the morning, you're listening to this. Everyone just looked around right now. Make sure there wasn't a snake in their room.
I can confirm that the snake does not have a rattle. Okay. So it is not a rattlesnake. We believe it is a non-poisonous snake. So we're gonna see what happens and maybe we'll update more later.
Okay. All right. We'll check back to that. In the meantime, here's my segue. I'm trying to see if the Celtics can slither their way into the NBA finals against the Golden State.
Usually I'm the one with the segues here, but you did a good one there. I like it.
I had to do it. It was just right there. Yeah. Celtics down 2-1 as we talk right now. Oh man, we're just on the throngs of things against this tough Heat team. The bottom line is it's going to take a pretty heroic effort for the Celtics to make it to the finals again, back there against Steph Curry and the Warriors, but we're hanging our head high. I've been rocking this playoff beard, Mike, and I'm about, let's see, a little over a month in. I've trimmed it once, but the original hair is still there. So we'll see if the facial hair makes it one more week with the Celtics.
You got to post a picture or it's not real.
Yeah. Maybe at the end of the run. We'll see.
Maybe. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Bites, makers of Toasty Pops, Toasty Snacks, and all those good Toasty brand products that you love. Healthy on-the-go snacks for you. Check out toasty.com/COL, promo code COL20. Before we get to your workplace blunder, I'll call it. I'm going to let you set the record straight.
It is not my fault. It is not my fault.
I'm hearing it might be. I don't know. So we're going to have to let you set the record straight. But I got to ask a quick, am I crazy for this question? I posted it on our food Instagram, always end with food pod as well. Mike, I find that the frozen pizzas that myself and my wife make are good. They get the job done, but sometimes they don't quite have all the flavor or pack all the punch I need on them. So sometimes what I do is when we get this meat lover's frozen pizza, I actually chop up some peppers and onions on my own and I put them on top of the frozen pizza. So the question is, am I crazy for adding extra toppings on an already prepared frozen pizza?
No, you're a genius.
Okay. Great. I just want to make sure.
This is what smart people do. And if you're anti extra toppings on a frozen pizza, then you can just go ahead and order yourself a Domino's pizza and eat that crap.
Yeah, you can. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going insane. That it felt like a neat move to do. It looks a little weird when I throw it in the oven, but it's an amazing ad. So if you haven't done it before, if you got the meat lover and you want to make it a supreme, just go ahead and chop a green pepper and an onion and you're on your way. That was my food find for the week.
All right. All right, so let's set the record straight, Alex.
Yeah, what did you mess up at work, Mike?
I did nothing wrong. Okay. I just want to say that up front for the record, I did nothing wrong. So what happened was I was bringing a rolling rack on Thursday full of delicious, ready-to-be baked pastries into our walk-in cooler at work. So I work in a bakery now. It's what I do. And you got to kind of lift it a little bit to get over the threshold.
Yes.
And this rack was pretty heavy. It was a heavy rack. It was full of stuff. And get lifted up just a little bit. And then I noticed that it's kind of wanting to topple.
Oh.
And I look down and see the wheel, one of the wheels has completely failed and given way, and the ball bearings are coming out of the socket of the wheel, and the wheel is on the floor. And I'm holding this rack, which has 20 full sheet pans of pastries on it, and I'm holding it for dear life to make sure it doesn't fall over, calling for help.
What a moment. You and your strength versus the rack in that moment.
So I save it. We get it pushed over to the side. We find something to kind of prop it up so that it'll kind of stay still, and then start unloading it to another rack. Unfortunately, during the moving of it, it shifted on this makeshift prop that we had for the wheel, and fell again. And then we lost a bunch of stuff off the rack.
How many trays do we lose? How many good friends do we lose in that battle?
I think we lost about, I don't know what the count was, because I'm not actually part of the pastry team. I was just helping them out with some egg washing before, you know, finishing up for the day. But I had to go back and egg wash maybe about another rack or two worth of stuff. Okay. So we were able to salvage a good bit of it.
Okay. I feel like the real disaster was avoided in part one there. I totally seeing the full rack falling on your face, you hitting the floor and 14 trays going flying all over the bakery floor. That's what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was, and I will say, thank goodness this was, you know, we said this after fact, thank God it was maybe me that was wheeling it in and I was able to catch it and hold it up, because some of the other team members in the kitchen, they are not,
might have an issue,
are not. Yeah. They may not have the strength to be able to hold it up, catch it and hold it up like that. So, it was like, thank goodness it was someone like me who could do that and save it. We are most disappointed that I was able to save it and then it was still lost in the end. Yes. So
nice save. All right. So it sounds like you're a hero and you work out. Those are the conclusions I got from this story. Is that right?
One of those is true.
Okay. We'll let everyone think about which one's true for the week. In the meantime, thank you all for tuning in. Another fantastic episode coming to your way, The Course of Life. Until then, we'll see you next week.